Hello there. This is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, with this month's news and information bulletin for friends and members of the club for April 2023. I'm Andrew, VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. Details of when to hear these news and information broadcasts are available at the club's website, www.raotc.org.au, or just put RAOTC into your favourite search engine. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you miss the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. The RAOTC is still in need of assistance. The pay isn't great, but it's big on job satisfaction. Club news for April 2023. Welcome to the April edition of RAOTC Club News. Many listeners will have observed that there was no broadcast for the month of March 2023. Please allow me to explain how this came about. I have mentioned several times in the past on how I became involved in the running of RAOTC, and that was a call for volunteers to help out. Some 12 years or so back, I stepped forward to maintain the website, a job I've enjoyed doing more or less since. It really is no burden to maintain the website, a task I can carry out provided I've got internet access, even when overseas or travelling around in my little caravan. Listeners will recall that Bruce, VK3UV, and Ian, VK3JS, produced the monthly news broadcast 11 times a year. They both had to retire due to health issues, not because they wanted to. I and others are of the perception that the monthly news broadcast is one of the few ways that members of the amateur community can be made aware of the RAOTC and what the club's aims are. Without a monthly news broadcast, it could well be the beginning of the end of the RAOTC. Now that I'm retired, I've got a little bit of spare time, so I'm happy to help out, just as I do, turning and hopefully not burning sausages at a local Bunnings every now and again, as a fundraiser activity for my own local radio club. Radio clubs provide a great outlet for like-minded people to socialise and discuss a wide range of technical subjects, as well as many other subjects, often with nothing to do with radio. In taking on the role of producing a broadcast, I've got my own formula I've developed, which seems to work. A little club news, and of course a talk or two regarding something remotely related to radio and electronics. It takes me almost a day, spread over a month or two, to prepare 30 minutes of audio. I don't mind doing it, just as I manage the website. The club news segment is first written, then read through, and undergoes many revisions before I turn the microphone on to record it. I don't have the gift that many broadcast radio presenters, along with many politicians, have, to ad-lib on for 5 or 10 minutes or so at a time. At present, it would appear I'm a one-man show. There's no broadcast team as such. I've got no intentions whatsoever to produce a broadcast 11 times a year. It is time someone else stepped forward to help carry the weight. So you'll hopefully hear me every second month, and until someone else, in a club that has nearly 500 members, steps forward to help out, you'll hear dead air. That's broadcast industry language for silence. If more than one other person steps forward, then that's even better. If someone else wants to produce a news bulletin every second month, there's no hard and fast formula on how to go about it. It might be quite different to the way I do it. That's fine. The software producer is free. Having clarified the future direction of RAOTC broadcasts, which will continue, I am pleased to advise that following on from our recent mail out requesting help, has had a pleasing response. There were a couple of members who stepped forward to manage the web page in my absence. I am pleased to welcome Chris, a VK6 Juliet India, who will take over the website maintenance when I am unable to do so. We haven't had a practice run as yet, but let's hope it all works. Until now, Clive, a VK6 CSW, has covered the area of proofreading. This is in addition to recording many articles for the monthly RAOTC broadcast, as well as being a prolific contributor of articles to OTN, the RAOTC Journal. Our editor, Bill, a VK3BR, has a very sharp eye, but not quite as sharp as Clive has. We have received some offers to proofread, but we need one or more editors. Without someone to edit OTN, there will be nothing for proofreaders to proofread. We also need a desktop publisher, someone to do the page layouts and produce the finished files to send off to our printer. If you can help in any small way, on a regular basis, then please touch base with the committee. It is now over to you. Please consider. Melbourne Luncheons. The guest speaker at the most recent luncheon was Bill Roper, VK3BR, who gave us a talk about Quilts of Valour Australia Incorporated and the impressive work they are undertaking to support the significant numbers of Australian military veterans who have been adversely affected as a result of their service to our country. There were around 40 members and guests in attendance, and whilst there were some teething problems with the first luncheon at the new venue, the Caulfield RSL has turned out to be an excellent choice. It's only 350 metres from the railway and off-street parking around the back for those that arrive early. Perf Luncheons. The popular and well-attended monthly luncheons for RAOTC members and friends in and around Perth are held on the second Tuesday of each month. The VK6 RAOTC group have a new venue, the Woodbridge Hotel, east of Guildford. Reports so far indicate the hospitality should be excellent. We will meet at 11:30 for lunch at 12 midday. This is not a buffet meal, but excellent food in both pensioner and standard portions are available. We would like to place the orders at 12 midday, so please don't be late. This information is courtesy of Phil, a VK6ZKO, whose contact details can be found on the club's website. Other luncheons. There's been no mention of any other luncheons or get-togethers. So if you're organising something, why not get in touch and I'll ensure it gets onto the website as well as the RATC broadcasts. There's really no reason why someone living in Sydney, for example, couldn't organise a function somewhere in Sydney. It's a pretty big place, similar to what occurs in Perth. There used to be an annual luncheon in Adelaide. It may start up again. New members. Today, I am pleased to welcome the following new members to the RAOTC. Colin Truman, a VK6 Alpha Charlie Tango, became new RAOTC member number 1849. And Brian Marrett, a VK7 Bravo Mike, became new RAOTC member number 1850, both on the 10th of February 2023. Silent Keys. Sadly, I report the following Silent Keys, some of whom died some time ago. We've only just been advised following our mail out requesting for help. Stan Roberts, ex VK3 Bravo Sierra Radio, member number 1272. Bill Adams, VK3 Zulu Whiskey Oscar, member number 1356. Reg Hawkins, a VK2 Tango Radio Hotel, member number 1727. Ray Turner, a VK2 Charlie Oscar X-Ray, member number 1348. Rob McNabb, VK3 Alpha India Mike, member number 829. Dave Rothwell, a VK2 Bravo Zulu Radio, member number 1414. Merv Deacon, a VK4 Delta Victor, member number 1230. And finally, Steve Grimsley, a VK2 Zulu Papa, RAOTC member number 465. Let us pause a moment in memory of our departed colleagues. Members are reminded, the very latest club news is available via the RAOTC website. Put RAOTC into your favourite search engine to find it. The new banking details for payment of monies to the RATC seems to be working very smoothly. That's about all the club news we have for you this month.
You are listening to VK3OTN. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateur Old Timers Club, Australia, Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
This month we have an interesting article for you by Clive at VK6CSW, who will be talking about an article published some years ago in OTN entitled A Good Idea, Target Location. This article was first broadcast in 2012. Now it's over to you, Clive, VK6CSW.
Gee, there's a good idea. For aerial bombing to be effective, you must be able to find your target. Early in World War II, the Germans used the Knickerbein steerable radio beam system to guide their bombers to their targets in all weathers. But until 1942, Britain's RAF Bomber Command relied solely on visual navigation, mainly at night, all too often with little success. Only one-tenth of British bombs fell within 5 miles of their target. By early 1940, the Germans had overrun France and the Low Countries, and by April, they'd invaded Norway and Denmark, giving them many airfields from which to attack England by day and by night, their bombers protected by fighter escorts. RAF fighters of that period, such as the Hurricane and the Spitfire, were short-range, interdictor machines, unable to penetrate as far as the German mainland. When the RAF retaliated by attacking Germany, fighter cover was impossible, so, of necessity, the British bombers had to fly under cover of darkness, fighting their own way through German air and ground defences, to and from their targets, navigating by map, without radio aids, and maintaining strict radio silence. Visual navigation at night over a blacked-out country was difficult enough. Attacks by German anti-aircraft defences and night fighters made it much harder. Bomber command losses were high and the result meagre, most bombing having little effect. Clearly, Bomber Command needed some form of accurate, passive radio navigation system, that is, one that would enable them to find their targets without revealing their presence through radio transmissions. In pre-war Europe, military and civil aircraft used radio compasses plus a well-developed HF direction-finding system for navigating, but radio compasses were largely useless at night due to skywave interference, whilst obtaining radio bearings from ground stations required a long transmission from the aircraft. Night navigation by radio compass over Germany, using beacons based in England, was out of the question, and making radio transmissions for HFDF would have been suicidal for the RAF bomber crews. In any case, in the early war years, many senior British air staff had no time for newfangled radio aids, and their policy was, simply, read your map, find your way. An attitude that, despite the heroism of bomber aircrew, led to poor results and high losses. In 1931, the German physicist, Dr. Meint Harms, proposed that a more accurate radio navigation system could be achieved by measuring the time interval between the transmission and reception of radio signals. His scheme was patented in Germany in 1932, but the idea was far ahead of its time due to the practical difficulty of measuring accurately the very small time intervals involved. By the mid-1930s, largely due to the work of British scientist R.J. Dippy, oscilloscopes had advanced to the point where measuring this small time difference was possible, a technique which laid the foundations of the British pre-war chain-home radar defence system. In 1937, while working with Robert Watson Watt on the development of radar, Bob Dippy conceived a runway approach guidance system using pulse transmitters together with an airborne cathode ray tube display. This would measure the time difference between synchronized pulses sent out from two transmitters placed equidistant at about 10 miles from and at right angles to a runway. While the aircraft remained on the runway extended center line, there would be no time difference between the pulses, and the pilot would see a single blip on his CRT. If the aircraft was off course, then there would be a time difference between the signals, and by identifying which of the two pulses was leading, the pilot would know which way to turn to regain the correct approach path. Unfortunately, oscilloscope screens of those days were small and not very bright. The practical difficulty of piloting an aircraft while trying to see a faint trace made the scheme impractical, and it was shelved while all effort was concentrated on getting the chain home defense radars operational. Nevertheless, Dippy persevered with his ideas and proposed a radio navigation system that he called Trinity, the name reflecting the three transmitters, a master and two slaves, that constituted the first practical hyperbolic radio navigation aid. The term hyperbolic derives from the shape of lines overlaid on the navigational chart, each line denoting a constant time difference between signals received from the transmitters. Each hyperbolic curve, the focus of which is the transmitting station, represents a line of position. The intersection of two or more lines of position gives a fix. These hyperbolic lines of position, when overlaid on the navigation chart, formed a grid, giving rise to the name G. Led by Dippy, the UK's Telecommunications Research Establishment set up an experimental radio navigation system with slave stations spaced about 80 miles from the master transmitter. Officially, the system was known as Air Ministry Experimental Station Type 7000, or AIMS 7000, but colloquially it was called G. A master plus two or more slaves constituted a G chain. The operating principle of G was the transmission of short pulses of 6 microseconds length on a frequency of about 30 megahertz. Each slave operated on the same frequency as the master, and, after receiving the master station's signal, transmitted its own pulse after a predetermined but precise delay. By using an oscilloscope, a navigator could interpret the radio position lines to accurately determine his aircraft's position. 30 megahertz was chosen initially because it was thought that the range would be about 100 miles without risk of interference from sky waves. G was originally intended mainly to assist bombers from many different stations to assemble in formations prior to setting course for the target and, on return, to help them find their way back to their own airfields. Initial trials in 1940 proved that not only was G highly accurate, but that its range was greater than first thought. On occasions, ranges of up to 450 miles were attained during operational sorties. These trials were kept secret from the air staff for fear that they would order them to be cancelled, but by late 1941, even the diehards in the Air Ministry realized that night visual bombing was ineffective and G was ordered into mass production. The first operational raid using G navigation took place on the 7th of March 1942. Targets were bombed far more accurately, and returning aircraft had a much better chance of finding their way back to their bases or to emergency alternates, thus saving many crew and their aircraft. The first 1,000 bomber raids began in May 1942. Without G, it's doubtful if the required degree of navigational accuracy needed to assemble the bomber streams and to guide them to their target would have been possible. In wartime, the secrecy of technical developments is paramount. Captured equipment can be reverse engineered and countermeasures developed, as happened with the Knickerbine beams. So effective were the British countermeasures to jam Knickerbine and even fly down the beams to attack the transmitters that the Germans withdrew it. Worse still for the Germans, a British copy of Knickerbine was used by RAF bombers to attack German targets. To mislead the Germans, G was referred to as Goon. The receivers were fitted with demolition charges to destroy vital circuits. G was considered so important that even the receiver type number was chosen to deceive. If a G receiver was captured intact, it was hoped that the false type number would mislead the Germans into believing that it was some new type of communications radio rather than a navigation aid. German double agents working for the British also spread tales to mislead the Germans in case captured British aircrew were forced to reveal what they knew about G. These ruses worked and gave the British more than 5 vital months during which G, free of any jamming or interference, played a crucial part in the successful bombing of Germany. In 1943, Dippy travelled to the United States to assist in the development of LORAN, long-range navigation, a hyperbolic radio nav aid using lower frequencies in the 1.7 to 2 MHz region to increase the useful surface range to about 1,200 miles. By 1944, many ships of the British and American navies were LORAN equipped, and both G and LORAN played essential roles in the successful landings on D-Day, the 6th of June 1944. Improved versions of LORAN remained in service until 2010. In 1944, a new type of G hyperbolic navigation known as GH was introduced. Unlike G, this was an active system using an airborne pulse transmitter to interrogate two or more ground-based transponders, similar to the OBO system. Plotting distances from two or more transponders gave a fix for blind bombing accurate to 300 feet at 200 miles range, noticeably better than the original G system, although achieving this accuracy depended on the relative locations of the transponders. GH used the same frequency bands as G, but a further development by RCA in America, known as Shoran, working on 300 MHz, could be as accurate as 20 yards at 200 miles. Shoran was effectively used by American bombers during the Korean War. G navigation continued into the jet age, with the last operational G chain being withdrawn in 1970. Although G is generally credited with being the first hyperbolic nav aid, the Germans did indeed make use of Dr. Meinthard's 1931 proposals, but in a somewhat different way. Their system was known as Sonar Consol and was used by the Luftwaffe throughout much of World War II and post-war by the Allies, but that's a different story. After the war, Bob Dippy went to New Zealand to work on electronics research and then came to Australia, where he became a divisional head of research at the Weapons Research Establishment near Adelaide. I wonder if he ever looked back at how his ideas had revolutionized radio navigation and said to himself, gee, that was a good idea.
Thanks very much, Clive.
You're listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations.
OTN on disk. Are you aware that the entire collection of OTN is available on disk, delivered right to your door for the minimal cost of $25? The files are all in a portable document format or PDF and can be viewed on any tablet or desktop PC. As time moves on, you've probably noticed that over the years you tend to hoard a few things. When something new arrives home, you have to find room to keep it. Well, why not consider adding the entire collection of OTN? The really good news is, it won't take up any space at all, and it won't provide any food for the silverfish, if you're plagued by them. There is another advantage that might not be quite so evident. The files are pretty much the same as what goes off to the printer twice a year. As time moves on, many readers realise their eyes aren't as young as they used to be. Viewing articles on a 22-inch screen is a whole lot easier. You can zoom right in and have one whole column on the screen at a time. Like online newspapers, it's not quite the same as a printed copy. But the advantage is you don't have to worry about where you're going to keep the things. Further details of how to order OTN on disk is available from the RAOTC website, www.raotc.org.au. This is Andrew, VK3CAH. You're listening to VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia.
And in keeping with tradition, we conclude this broadcast with a short story. A young man came to the maintenance section for work experience. The shift leader, being busy for the moment, handed the young fellow a broom with a polite request to tidy up the floor a bit until someone could show him some proper work. "But I'm a graduate engineer," protested the young man. "Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't think," apologized the shift leader. Taking the broom from the young man, he explained, "Look, this is how you hold a broom, And this is how you sweep a floor.
That's about all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks, where callbacks are taken. We look forward to being with you on the first Monday of next month, except January. 73 from VK3 OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia.